The title of the message today is Critical Blessings. Critical Blessings. The subject of blessings is way up there at the top of the list of important activities that need to be taking place in your life. And I want to take a deep dive into this subject today because in the world, they will talk about blessings and they address the whole topic of blessings in such a manner that is shallow and somewhat empty and frivolous or something that you forget rather easily. It's very important that people are blessed. And there's a reason why God blesses people. He is a wonderful God and a good God, but it goes beyond that. Blessings also involve character and how those blessings impact us, how we respond to those blessings, how we grab a hold of those blessings, and all of this involves character, which is most important to Him. So I have 12 stories for you today. I don't know if I'll be able to get through all 12, but we're going to do the very best that we can. So let's go to the book of Luke, Luke chapter 1. I want to take a look at a blessing here that is quite interesting, and I seldom ever hear this discussed in church. So it grabbed a hold of my imagination a couple of weeks ago as I was going through this particular true story. So let's go to the book of Luke chapter 1. Blessings are important. It's important from the standpoint of your spiritual health. It's important that we refine our tools and our abilities to get blessings. It's very important that when we are blessed, we share the good fortune with other people in the church. So there's a lot to blessings below the surface, more to blessings that meet the eye than I think people realize. So in the book of Luke chapter 1 and verse 5, it says, "There was in the days of Herod the king of Judea a certain priest named Zacharias of the divisions of Abijah, and his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God." They were good people. It doesn't mean they were perfect people. Righteous means they truly strove to be decent, good human beings, and they were, and God recognized this. "And they walked in all the commandments and the ordinances of the Lord, and they were blameless. But they had no child, because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both well advanced in years." Speculation, and this is all we can do concerning the speculation here, is maybe he was approaching 80 years of age, maybe even a little bit older. And these priests who would go in to burn the incense within the complex of the temple, this was a rare and wonderful opportunity. And there were so many priests, there were literally thousands of priests, and you were chosen by lot, and lot was a determining factor of who would go in to the presence of God and burn the incense. This was a very special occasion. Many priests in all of their lifetime never had that opportunity. So this was like a one in 10,000 chance that you would actually be chosen on a particular day, chosen by lot to go in and to burn the incense. So that oven by itself was a miracle of God. God was working through lots to choose this man, this individual, who was about to be blessed in a profound way. But they don't have children. So through her 20s and through her 30s and probably through her 40s, maybe into her 50s, they had prayed and prayed and prayed for a child, and the prayer was not answered. So they had assumed by that point in time, no doubt, and I don't know when that took place, probably after some decades, that God was not going to answer that prayer. But they continued to stay faithful to God. But God works in mysterious ways, and he was to answer the prayer. It wasn't on their timetable, which is a very important lesson to learn when it comes to the blessings of God and how God works through this incredible vehicle of being blessed by him. So it was the custom, verse 9, according to the custom of the priesthood, that his lot fell to burn incense when he went into the temple of the Lord. So a wonderful opportunity here. And the whole multitude of the people, they were praying outside at the hour of incense. You didn't burn incense at any particular time. I mean, there was a particular time. So all of this is backstory. This was a very special occasion. This is a miracle in progress. He doesn't know it yet, but God is placing him in the temple. Sometimes God is working in our lives. We don't see it right away. Sometimes maybe even it takes months or even years before we see it. But he's working, and the whole multitude is praying. Again, it's very important to the nation. In verse 11, and an angel of the Lord appeared to him, to Zechariah, standing on the right side of the altar of the incense. And when Zechariah saw the angel, he was troubled. Fear fell upon him. So he's afraid. He's terrified. All of a sudden, there's this angel, Gabriel, who no doubt was in wonderful form and shape, probably radiating energy, I'm sure. But it stuns him. In verse 13, the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zacharias, for your prayer is heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you shall call him by the name of John." He was to become John the Baptist. Your prayer is heard? That prayer was prayed probably 30 or 40 years ago. But from God's perspective, the prayer was heard way back then. It was a matter of timing. So never get so discouraged to think that a prayer is not answered. There will be those occasions when the prayer will be answered in God's timing. For this couple, as they waited through their 20s and no doubt through their 30s and probably through their 40s, maybe even into their 50s, but even into your 50s, not too many women at that time had children. They prayed and prayed and prayed. And at some point, they gave up. How can I say that with any degree of confidence? They didn't give up on God as being their God. But notice the rest of the story. In verse 14, it says, "You will have joy and gladness." Oh, yes, indeed. To finally have a child at that age. And I'm sure they ached for just that one child for all those years. "And many will rejoice at his birth. For he will be great in the sight of the Lord, and he shall drink neither wine nor strong drink. He will also be filled with the Holy Spirit, even from his mother's womb. And he will turn many of the children of Israel to the Lord their God." And truly, he was a great prophet of God. He was John the Baptist. "He will also go before him in the spirit and the power of Elijah, to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." And then Zacharias, being the man of faith he is, well, a man whose faith is wavered, as we shall see, says to the angel, takes nerve to say this to the angel, which just tells you this great blessing is going to come upon you. But this is what happens with God's people. They pray for things, but then maybe the months grind on and that layer of doubt gets thicker and thicker. And they stop believing. They're still very dedicated to God, but they slowly stop believing. And he says to the angel, "How shall I know this? For I'm an old man, and my wife is well advanced in years." Gabriel reveals who he is, one of the great archangels. And the angel answered and said to him, and I'm sure with great boldness and clarity, he said, "I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God. It was sent to speak to you and bring you these glad tidings. But behold, because of your lack of faith," not your lack of dedication, very dedicated man, "because you doubted what God just told you, but behold, you will be mute and not able to speak until the day that these things take place, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their own time." Interesting, isn't it? A great blessing takes place. But I say God is saying this because Gabriel had the authority to pronounce this spanking upon him. You didn't believe me? I think sometimes, brethren, you know, we are so patient with our doubts. We're so patient with our lack of faith. We're so patient with our wavering in our faith, and God gets angry with that. Well, we're too patient with our doubts. We're too patient with our fears. And we need to be reminded of that. We need to be rebuked. But God loves Zacharias, and he is still going to be blessed in a great way, but he has to go through a period of time, obviously the period that John is in the womb, and he is mute. He cannot speak. There's some speculation maybe he couldn't hear as well, but definitely he is mute. Verse 21, and the people waited for Zacharias and marveled that he lingered so long in the temple. Something was going on. They knew him to be a righteous man and a good man. Shame on you for doubting God. So he's in the temple. Who else knows what goes on in that temple? And when he had came out of the temple, he could not speak to them, and they perceived that he had seen a vision in the temple. Obviously, he was a man of character, so he wasn't a man who was going to make something up. You're not dealing with that type of a person. And he remained speechless. So it was as soon as the days of his service were completed that he departed in his own house. So he continued his days of service in the temple. So it was as soon as the days of his service were completed, he departed. Verse 24, and after those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and she hid herself for 5 months, saying, thus the Lord had dealt with me in the days when he looked on me to take away my reproach from among the people. Very hard, I think, for us to understand that. Men particularly, when a woman wants to have a child and she can't have a child, and the weeks or the months go on and on and on. We live in a different age. Maybe it's not as pronounced as it was back then, where people literally thought maybe you were being cursed by God for some reason. Certainly was not the case with this woman of character. So it was in the 6th month that the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth, and to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary. And having come in, and the angel said to her, rejoice, highly favored one, the Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women. 6 months later. So you can actually tell roughly the time of Christ's birth, comparing it, because we know basically exactly when John the Baptist was birthed, and we know that Jesus Christ was born in the fall of the year, probably late September, back in his time, probably somewhere around the time of the Feast of Tabernacles. Could have been during the Feast of Tabernacles, could have been the last great day. A lot of speculation about that, but he definitely was not born on December the 25th. That's kind of a side story. In verse 29, she is troubled, but there's a different reaction here to Gabriel. Fascinating here. Take note. When she saw him, she was troubled at the saying and considered what manner of greeting this was. I'm sure she was totally taken aback. My best guess, she could have been 16, 17. I doubt she was much older than 18 years of age, because they truly did enter into the engagement period quite young, and then maybe by the time she was married, she could have been 19 or even 18. I think she was quite young. And the angel said to her, verse 30, do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. The subject matter I'm talking about today, it really boils down to these three words, finding favor with God. So as we explore a little bit deeper into blessings and how God uses blessings to work with his people and to develop character and to develop patience and to strengthen them and to guide them and to bless others, because we'll see later on in the sermon, when you're blessed, if I'm blessed, whatever that way may be, I best share that blessing with other people. If I'm financially blessed, I best share it with, you know, the widows and the orphans, so to speak. If I'm blessed in some other way and God opens a door, I can use that blessing and the joy from that blessing and share with people in other ways. So blessings are given to us so that we can glorify God, in essence, to other people. Blessings are given to us so we can glorify God, and that involves sharing those blessings with other people, a good word of encouragement or a deeper friendship or a financial help during a time of need, which is a wonderful thing people can do to others, and so on. So this is fascinating. Verse 31, and behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and his name shall be called Jesus, and he will be great. He will be called the Son of the Highest. Incredible, really, when you think about what's taking place here. And verse 34, she doesn't doubt him. You see, Zacharias doubted. She doesn't doubt him, but she's trying to understand how it is all going to take place. There's a different attitude here. So when you seek a blessing, brethren, and you're serious about it, and you know it's a good blessing, and it's something that certainly is within the confines of the personality or character of God, it's not a silly thing. It's not an obsession with materialistic things, though material blessings are not wrong, and they too can be requested. Let your attitude be that of Mary and not of Zechariah. I mean, let the expectation be there, let the humility be there. And the angel answered and said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you," verse 35, "and the power of the Highest will overshadow you." So it's the power of God's Spirit that overshadows her, and she becomes pregnant. And then it says, "Now indeed your relative Elizabeth and John the Baptist and Christ were related." How much contact did they have growing up? That's always been a speculation. We don't know. Fascinating, though, subject matter. Verse 37, "For with God nothing will be impossible." Very important to understand, whatever the blessing is, big or small, that is requested, that we see people wrap themselves around here as we go through this subject today, big or small, we always give honor to God because He's the God of the impossible. He's to be glorified. And no matter how difficult your situation may be, no matter how distant the blessing you may request may seem to be, it is truly nothing to God. The degree of seriousness you pursue the blessing is an issue. Your persistence in pursuing the blessing, the determination and so on, those things are important and can determine whether or not you get the blessing. So story number one, I just wanted to focus on Zechariah and how eventually he was blessed in this great way. And then you see these interesting blessings, such as the blessing of little children. Where did that all come about? Well, we don't know, quote, the origins, except that the people wanted Christ to bless the children. We take this very seriously. So the second story I want to mention here to bring out the way God works, let's go to Mark chapter 10. Let's go to Mark chapter 10. This is important. It is serious. And, you know, normally at the Feast of Tabernacles or shortly thereafter, we ask God to bless little children. And parents take this seriously, and we focus on the protection of the child and that even guiding the parents and teaching the ways of God to the children. We want God to work in their lives, even though they're not converted. God can still work with them, and it's very important. It's just showing that God uses this vehicle, this favor of God. Blessing is a type of favor that God gives us, and we all desire God's favor in our lives. The trials will be there, and they too can serve as blessings, but we want that favor. Verse 13 of Mark 10, "Then they brought little children to him that he might touch them." The disciples rebuked the people, but when Jesus saw it, he was greatly displeased with them. "Let the little children come to me, and do not forbid them, for such is of the kingdom of God." But the kingdom of God too, sometimes we can almost forget this in the study of blessings. In the kingdom of God, people will be greatly blessed. Healings will take place. Families will be healed. Even the nations and their fighting and their anger one toward another, all of that eventually will be healed. The land will be blessed and healed. It'll be a time of wonderful blessings. People will have God's Spirit. Human minds will be healed. All these are blessings. God is a God who blesses. God is a God who blesses, but he's not cavalier about it. He's not silly in his blessings. It's not magic dust, you know. He doesn't reach down into a bag and, "Well, I'm going to give magic dust to you," or hit you with a wand. You know, in movies, one of the Disney movies, they've got wands and they hit you with wands and throw magic dust, and which is a subtle undermining of the blessing of how God blesses. At the human level, it's just interesting that he touched those children. He didn't just say, "Okay, there's a group of 30 children. Blessed be all of you," and not touch them. There is this element of touching. Even in an anointing, you touch the person. It's personal. There's a contact issue involved when we anoint. God has determined it to be such, or we lay our hands upon that cloth. God meant it to be intimate in that way. You know, a blessing is an intimate response from God to you. It's intimate, special. Intimate meaning special, which is a wonderful thing. Let the little children come to me and do not forbid them. In a way, this is interesting as well. It's charming what Christ did. You know, there's a time back years ago, people were considered to be charming. Not silly in their tongue, but the way they treated other people to make them feel welcomed in their home. You heard the story about the queen, and this is a true story. When she first became queen, had a guest sit at her table with all these other dignitaries, and they would have a finger bowl where if your fingers got oily or greasy, you would kind of wash your fingers in the finger bowl, you know? Well, this one guest didn't know what it was, picked up the finger bowl and drank it, okay? But the queen, in order to make her guest feel welcome, immediately did the same thing. And then everybody else did the same thing. That's charming. You're considerate of other people's feelings. I think Jesus Christ was a very charming individual. Not in the charming in the way we see it today used to seduce a woman or something like that. But just that charming nature. And he takes time to be with the little kids and to lift them and to hold them and to touch them and to talk with them. A very charming moment here and a wonderful moment. And then verse 16, he took them up in his arms, physical contact, laid his hands on them and blessed them. Beautiful, isn't it? Beautiful that this is of God. This is the way he works. This is the way he thinks, that he even wants to bless little children. Now, those little children didn't really understand what was taking place. But you get a real definite, clear sense that children felt very comfortable with him. So he was a man of authority, a man of great power, but he was incredibly approachable at the same time. You see these wonderful blending of characteristics about him. Powerful, speaks with authority, could be angry, and I'm sure his voice could boom, but at the other time, women could approach him. A whore approaches him in somebody's home, and she weeps and washes his feet, and he, again, in a very charming, loving way, allows her to do that and blesses her there. So this is the God we deal with, a gentleness that is shown here. Gentleness is very important to God. You know, sometimes you're going through a rough patch in your life and you just, God, be gentle to me. I need to see your gentleness. So the blessing of the children, fascinating, isn't it? Always thought that story was special. Speaking of children, let's go to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel, where we take a look at Hannah and how Hannah is blessed. Go to 1 Samuel. Now, this is very, very critical to understand what is taking place here as you seek out blessings from God. Blessings vary. Some can be material. Some blessings have to do with human relationships. Maybe you're looking for favor within a family context or where you work in a situation. Maybe you're in the middle of a lawsuit. You know, I mean, there are all these different ways God can bless a person. Here was a woman who was desperate again. She wanted to have a child, and she had been praying for some time, yet God delayed the response. I cannot say for sure why he delayed the response, though. My belief is he wanted to bring her to a greater degree of fervency in seeking him out. And I think he does do this. Sometimes God grants blessings relatively quickly. Other times there's a season of seeking out. God's interesting. He wants to be pursued. You know, in Chronicles and in the Psalms, again and again you see God says to those who seek me out, or he'll talk about a king or the nation, they did not seek me out. Or then again on the flip side, and the nation sought me out. He's very responsive to the seeking process. So if you want to improve the degree of blessing in your life, improve the energy of the seeking, which is so important to Him, you want to be blessed. God wants to bless us, but we need to understand the way He acts here. So she's without child. She's being tormented by this other woman. Remember, there's another woman involved because Elkanah had two wives. She reaches this point of extreme bitterness. Verse 10, sometimes God allows us to reach a boiling point where we seek Him with great intensity. He's trying to bring out the intensity, right? He wants the intensity because intensity is intimacy. You know, there are times in a marriage when there's greater intensity. Sorry to be a little bit blunt and graphic, but hopefully if you're married, you go through the wedding day, and then the honeymoon is a time of greater intensity, is it not? It should be mental, emotional, you're together, you're alone, there's physical intimacy. It heightens the intensity. This was all created by our Creator for a reason. Our fight is to constantly maintain high levels of intimacy with God and with Jesus Christ. Very hard to do. You got to pray. You got to pray when you don't feel like praying. You search the Bible out for His character and His promises, and you're striving to maintain a high level of intensity. And then it is at that time, not in every situation, I want to make that clear, not always, but there will be those special times that you don't get the blessing until you reach that higher level of intimacy, i.e. intensity. And this is what takes place. This is a great story because you see how God works in this. And you see this wonderful woman. I'll be very interested to meet her in the kingdom. She was in bitterness of soul. Look, there's a time to be in bitterness of soul. When a request of a deeply desired request has not been responded to. It can be very painful. It could be very difficult. But she's bitter. We don't know how many years went by. And she prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. Some prayers require weeping. As a general rule, we're not an emotional church, right? I mean, we're not, certainly during services, we're not yelling and whooping and crying. On occasion, there may be a sermon or maybe you're trying to make a point and it gets a little bit emotional, but those are relatively few and far between. We're more reserved. I understand that. But when you take a look at these people in the first century or during times of deeply desiring to be blessed by God, to have God show favor to them or to touch them, there is a weeping that takes place. It may be in the privacy of your home or maybe with your spouse or people you know very, very well, but there's a depth of emotion shown here, and sometimes God requires that. You can't put it on. We never pretend, right? We don't believe in pretending, but sometimes it takes time. Jesus Christ agonized in the Garden of Gethsemane with strong crying and tears, we're told. Jacob wrestled all night and held on and begged. The whole story of Jacob wrestling at night, he begged, he pleaded, bless me, I won't let you go, bless me, agonized, even in pain, wouldn't let him go. Then she makes a vow. Now, here again, I'm talking about vows, and you need to be especially careful. It doesn't mean you have to make a vow, but it shows the degree of intensity. It had reached a boiling point, and she said, I will vow, this child will be given to you, but give me a child. And she said, remember me, and don't forget your maidservant. And in essence, this is what a blessing is it not? When you go to God with all of your heart and soul, or maybe as you pray for somebody else you love, and they're struggling with a trial or a problem or a health issue or a job impasse, and you pray with all of your heart and soul, even weeping with tears, and you say to God, remember me and don't forget your maidservant. It's beautiful what she says here. Because a blessing is seeking him out and saying, remember me. And then she says, and no razor shall come upon his head. And it happened, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli watched her. And Hannah spoke in her heart, so her lips were moving, very intense, but her voice was not heard. And Eli, who was the high priest, thought she was drunk. You know, it's a bad enough day for her, and then the high priest thinks you're drunk. How long will you be drunk? Verse 14. Put your wine away. And Hannah answered and said, no, my Lord, I'm a woman of sorrow of spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. And often that is the key for the blessing to be given. You pour out your soul. So she reveals her desire. And then Eli answered and said, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition, which you have asked him. And she said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. She respected Eli. She didn't know he was kind of a weak high priest, but she respected him in the office. And the woman went away and ate, and her face was no longer sad. And she returned, and she came to Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah. They had an intimate relationship. And the Lord remembered her. That is beautiful. When you're blessed, the Lord remembers you, doesn't he? That is such a wonderful moment when God remembers us. It should be sought out with even greater fervency. So you can see how God is working through all of this and how he blesses people. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. There is another way that God blesses. So let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. I value this a whole lot more than I used to. Let's go to Ephesians 6. For God to work on the human spirit and the human mind is a big blessing. And to be given wisdom, to be given insight, to be given courage when maybe you don't have courage in a particular situation, or strength or boldness or something of that nature, something that has to do with the human mind and the human spirit, is a great blessing that can come from God. So if you take a look at Ephesians 6, in verse 18, he says, praying always with all prayer and supplication. I mean, these people were very rigorous in their prayer life. It wasn't just kind of lukewarm prayers done on a regular basis. They pursued God constantly. They constantly wanted God's involvement in their life in all different arenas, all different manner, whether from health and healing to open doors to strengthening of the brethren to times of persecution. I mean, they were praying about so many different things because they wanted God involved, because God is never to be taken for granted, and blessings need to be pursued with vigor. Verse 18, praying always with all prayers and supplications in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplications for all the saints. We know other people in the church, all types of problems in the church now, health issues, job problems, discouragements of various sorts, and we can pray with supplication. Supplication is like pray with energy, pray with constant energy. Don't let go. Always remember. Don't put it on the back burner. Supplication is the exact opposite of the visual you have of back burner. You know, we use that expression, well, I'll put that on the back burner. Supplication, front burner, that burner is hot. And that's what supplication is. Yes, there would be more answers to the prayers of our brethren if our supplications were more rigorous and invigorated. Absolutely. Absolutely. But this lousy world we live in that constantly is sucking away our time, our energy, distorting our focus, distracting us, it takes away from our spiritual energy, doesn't it? We can be very dedicated, but that spiritual energy can be weakened by this world we live in. So it's a constant battle I have to fight. Okay, and in verse 19, he says to the brethren, and for me that utterance may be given to me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel. He needed a confidence, a boldness. Now, Paul was not a weak man, but in the context of the world he had to deal with, he could be beaten up, put in prison, hurt physically in a terrible way. He needed a literal boldness, of spirit, and he prayed for it. We live in a different world today. I would not need that today, really. What I would need is I ask God, and I ask you to pray for me, great clarity of focus in this incredibly unfocused world when I'm doing radio programs and talking to people, because I've got to be as focused and as clear as possible to try to penetrate the layers of stuff all these people think. And then I would certainly say a definite zeal, a high energy presentation, because you got to have high energy physically, mentally, verbally. Got to be high energy, you know, when I'm doing those radio programs, high energy when I go into those prophecy studies. So if I overdo it a little bit and swing a bit too hard, so be it. I don't care, really. I have to have the high energy. I got to punch and not jab. Not to put people down or attack people just to attack people, but to make the point, which is so important, because we live in a Laodicean world. So those are the things I ask that you would pray for me. Clarity of message and simplicity of message. I can't go into prophecy study and talk about clean and unclean meats. What does it mean to be born again? You're not going to be raptured. It's just too much for people. They're overwhelmed. We don't have a plain truth magazine. I got to stick to a pretty simple, clear message. One or two, 3 points and drive it home, drive it home, drive it home. And then work from there. And then do it effectively. Really, you're in a fight is what you're in. They don't know that, but I'm in a fight when I go into those prophecy seminars. It's a fight. They don't understand that, nor will I tell them. So I got to hit them to try to wake them up and get them to see the law is important. And we are going into captivity, and it's worse than you could ever imagine. Things like that. Among other things, the kingdom of God, of course, is very important as well. I understand that. So you can ask for boldness, or you can ask for wisdom or great ability in your job. These things are all available to us because he's a God who is good in these ways. So understand, blessings come in different packages, different sizes. Blessings for your children. Maybe they're having a problem at school. Blessings in how you deal with a troublesome person in your family system. Ask, but ask with boldness and clarity, and even with supplication, where sometimes you go again and again and again. He's there. He chooses to bless. However, we pursue him with rigor. Mr. Carlson mentioned that book on Pete Rose, who was a baseball player. And I remember Pete Rose playing baseball and so on, but it really grabbed my attention. So I did end up getting the book. And his dad taught him always to hustle, that when you're playing baseball, you always run to first base. He was just known for his hustle. Just interesting to read. He had his weaknesses, of course, but there was a rigor. He was rigorous. He was really threw himself into a match. We all like to do that, you know, in sports. If you see a team, you know, you want to see them play their sport with energy, and there's something appealing, but God's very much that way, you know. So I'm going to tease our friend here. Arsenal's going to be playing this year. They better play with rigor, right? You know, I'm teasing Jordan, but he's an Arsenal fan, but we got the Premier League coming up. And, you know, you just love to see a team play with energy. And you don't want to see them kind of stalled and hesitant. Even in sports, we can relate to that. So, but in our prayer lives, as we search God out, we want to be vigorous. And if you're down, if you're discouraged, ask God for the strength. He will give you that as well. Sometimes it's hard to pray because you're just down. But ask God for the strength. He will strengthen you. Just say, I'm down. I need to be strengthened. Strengthen me. But stay with it. It'll come. He definitely will strengthen you. So you can see this with the Apostle Paul. We're talking about God's blessings. And I think one of the greatest blessings in life, which can be easily taken for granted, is the blessing of friendship. So let's go to the book of 1 Samuel chapter 20. 1 Samuel chapter 20. It is a good thing to ask God for friends or a particular friend. I believe completely, totally, that Jonathan was given to David by God. Can't emphatically prove that. But you just take a look at that story. And David needed somebody he could talk to, somebody he could totally trust in. And that's difficult. Maybe not as easy as people think. He had relatives, and up to a certain degree, he could trust them. But with Jonathan, that was a true friendship. And the two had a very close friendship. Jonathan apparently was quite a bit older than David. But Jonathan, being the man of humility and high character he was a man of great character, Jonathan. And David benefited from that. So chapter 20 of 1 Samuel talks about David, and he's fleeing, and he's running for his life, and he's running from King Saul, and he's trying to work through it all. He's under enormous stress and pressure. And so Jonathan said to him, verse 2, "You shall not die. Indeed, my father will do nothing, either great or small, without first telling me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." I mean, Jonathan's very open here and saying, look, if my father's going to try to hurt you, he'll let me know. And Jonathan was being honest, but then Jonathan came to realize, well, yes, my father is going to try to harm you. But Jonathan is faithful to David. In verse 4, "So Jonathan said to David, 'Whatsoever you yourself desire, I will do it for you.'" I mean, this is a very close friendship now. And in verse 5, David said to Jonathan, "Indeed, tomorrow it is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit with the king to eat, but let me go that I may hide in the field until the third day." So he's testing Saul to see, you know, is Saul that angry with David? And Jonathan goes along with the test. Verse 12, we're moving through the story here. Let's go to verse 12. "Jonathan said to David, 'The Lord, the God of Israel, is witness. When I have sounded out my father sometime tomorrow or the third day, or indeed there's a good toward David, and I do not send to you and to tell you, may the Lord do so and much more to Jonathan.'" It's all about promises and oaths that friends make. And in verse 14, it says, "You shall not only show me the kindness of the Lord while I still live, that I may not die, but you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever. Not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David." And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "Let the Lord require it at the hand of David's enemies." And Jonathan again caused David to vow. Very serious. A vow is in play. The vow took upon God's name, okay? So you can't get more serious than this. They make this vow to one another, a friendship and protection. And Jonathan says, "Look, you'll take care of my lineage, as it were." And David did do that after Jonathan died. And they go through this whole process, and David hides in the field. And then David realizes, and Jonathan realizes too, that Saul is ready to kill David. And then the two men have to part ways. And in verse 42, it says, "Jonathan said to David, 'Go in peace, since we have both sworn in the name of the Lord.'" Sworn in the name of the Lord. This carries great weight. "May the Lord be between me and you, and between your descendants and my descendants forever." So he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. So David had to flee. Jonathan was still faithful to his father. And eventually, Jonathan dies in battle. David lost the best friend he ever had when Jonathan died. But during the time of great stress and trial, for all those years and fleeing, Jonathan was his friend, and that was so important. And a friend is such a blessing from God. And there's a time to ask for a friend to enter into your life, and it can make a great difference, and it can give somebody you can vent to, somebody, it's a sounding board, somebody who gives you wisdom, who helps you to calm down. Friendship is so important in this life. I feel sorry for some of these people I meet at the Prophecy Bible Study, and I get together with them, and you get to know them, and their families are broken apart, and they're moving all over the place, and you get talking with them, and you realize many of these people don't have friends. Their lives are so broken, so shattered. They do well at their job. They have maybe a few surface-type friendships where they work, but they don't have any real close friends. It is so sad. It is so sad. But this is Satan's world where families are broken apart. People move all the time. So much fragmentation in America is becoming known in Western Europe as the land of single people. The land of single people. And that is happening. So David, though, is blessed, and I believe God blessed David with this man called Jonathan, and they had many good years together. And David honored the oath later on with Mephibosheth. He finds this crippled son of Jonathan called Mephibosheth and greatly honors Mephibosheth. It's a wonderful story, but that's something different. So you can even ask that God would give you a friend or your children. I know it's important. You want your children to have good friends. That's so important, isn't it? I mean, growing up. That is just an important dynamic that God created us to need that and to have that and to desire that. Clarity is one of the greatest blessings that God can give as you work your way through, well, what should I do? I don't know what to do. Let's go to this example. Let's get back to the book of Luke, where even Jesus Christ in the flesh, and I've referenced this before, but it's so important, and God will act as you seek him out and help give you clarity, and as you decide what to do in your life, who to marry, those big decisions, or maybe it has to do with your career, or how to handle a situation within a family context, whatever it may be. I love the story because even Jesus Christ in the flesh had to seek out clarity. In verse 12 of Luke 6, always remember this. God blesses us with clarity. Now, it doesn't always come that clarity in 24 hours. It could take weeks, sometimes months. But maybe it would come when you spend a whole night in prayer seeking him out. In a way, you're fast-tracking the process, aren't you? Hate to use modern language here, but it's almost like fast-tracking it. I want God to show me quickly. I'm going to spend the whole night in prayer concerning this issue. In verse 12, and it came to pass in those days when Christ went to the mountain to pray, he continued all night in prayer to God. He was alone. But even Jesus Christ needed clarity because he was in the flesh as to who the 12 would be. He had to choose 12. He had to go through the experience of being a man of making decisions. Not everything was automatic with him. He spent the night in prayer. That gave him clarity. Do you need clarity? Set aside larger chunks of time where you spend time with God seeking that clarity out. Study the Bible, go for longer walks, meditate more, think, put effort into it, search him out with rigor, and he'll give you that clarity. He will always give you that, but you've got to work toward that. Blessings require work. Remember, it's not hocus pocus or magic dust. And that's okay, because as we work through the process, we become more intimate with him. He wants the intimacy. We want the request to be granted. Oh, that's okay. He knows we're children, right? But that's good. And he spends all night. And when day came in verse 13, he called his disciples to himself. And from them he chose 12, whom he also named apostles. Simon, who was named Peter, Andrew, his brother, James and John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Simon called Zealot, Judas, the son of James. That was an important choice. Who was the Judas to be? That was a very important choice he had to make. None of it was taken for granted. And in humility, he went to God, looking for God's guidance all throughout the night. Seek him out. What a blessing clarity of mind is. It's just a wonderful blessing. Wonderful blessing. Let's take a look at Nehemiah. Let's go to Nehemiah chapter 1. Another man who is greatly blessed. Nehemiah chapter 1. Open doors. You need an open door in your career. Maybe you need an open door in regards your romantic life. These are the realities. People have to deal with these things. Maybe you need an open door for your first job. Maybe you need an open door in terms of maybe a better home, living in a different neighborhood. What is so fascinating about the book of Nehemiah is just the process God takes him through. I think of all the Old Testament books, if I had only one to take with me on a desert island, I would choose the book of Nehemiah, because there's just so much there in that book. So many examples, so much wisdom, how God works, what Nehemiah did. It's just wisdom dense. It is outstanding. So Nehemiah is working, very big responsibility. He's constantly within the presence of the king. He's a part of the Persian kingdom. He is the cupbearer, which was no small responsibility, and it certainly had a lot more to do than with just giving wine to the king. You had to make sure he wasn't poisoned. You were in charge of banquets. You were always in his presence. You heard the most delicate, intense, high confidence level conversations, because you're there with the wine and the water or whatever, and with the guests, so you're hearing everything. It's like being around President Trump and you're always in the Oval Office. Okay, this is not a job for dummies. These people are astute. They instinctively know timing, when to approach, when not to approach, what to do, when not to do. There's a real gift in that. There's a wisdom on how to approach, how and what to say, how to read the king's moods. This man was highly skilled, very well organized. And you see that as you go through the story. You know, the movies kind of make it out. He's just sitting around all day ready to hand him a glass of wine or a portal of wine, but it's much more than that. But God puts in his mind, and he begins to develop this desire to build the walls of Jerusalem. Then he determines, well, how can I do this? Because I have to get the king's approval, because you just don't go building the walls of a rebellious city. You know, at the top of the list of the rebellious cities and all these various cities under the control of the Persians, Jerusalem was way up there at the top, those pain-in-the-neck Jews. And same applied with the Romans. Those Jews were very difficult to deal with. Anyway, he had to work through all this and prayed and prayed and prayed. And the story here, the blessing came, meaning the open door came after 4 months. We're a rushed culture. We give up too quickly. We lose heart quickly. We even forget what we pray about. But understand, sometimes it just takes time to open that door. Don't get discouraged. Pray and pray and pray regarding that open door, whatever the issue is. And God is very responsive to that. I want open doors, but it may take time. You're not going to resolve it in 48 hours. It just doesn't work that way with God. There are timing issues, things he has to put in place we don't see. And he goes through this process, and he repents, and he fasts. He goes through a period of fasting and prayer and fasting for 4 months. And in verse 10, chapter 1, he says, "Now, these are your servants and your people whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants," others were praying, "who desire to fear your name, and let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in sight of this man, for I was his cupbearer." So they're praying, looking to God, even fasting. They want this open door. This is a very depressing time in the history of Israel. There's no wall around Jerusalem, which was shameful if your city didn't have a wall. They had built the temple, and I mean, the whole community was down. It was depressed. It seemed like God had almost forgotten his people. Have you not ever had a period of time in your life? It just seems like the months go by and there's no blessing. Where are the blessings? It's a depressing time. But God is there. He can work soon. Your depression creates personal distortions, which are not true at all, depression is dangerous because it distorts. And people think, well, God's never going to answer this prayer, or God's forgotten, or I guess I'm just going to have to continue slogging it through. And then people lose perspective, and this is what happened to the whole community. God blessed this one man whose faith was intense and grinding and determined. One man had the faith to build those walls, and then others started to respond to his faith, and then it started to turn around. But it was faith in a God who is responsive. So I need to emphasize that. It's the God who blesses. It's the God who wants to bless. And then in chapter 2, we know from the sequence of events, it was 4 months later. In verse 1, and it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and I gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in the presence of the king before. Now, it was very important, but he couldn't hide his sadness. It doesn't mean he was all happy for 4 months. He was a man of faith, but he had to fight through, you know, the periods of discouragement. It doesn't mean the discouragement's going to lift immediately, but you fight through it, you grind through it, you fight and fight through it, right? It's a fight, sometimes faith, and periods of discouragement, and it just seems like the gray skies will never lift, but he never gave up. He continued to pray, and then the door opened. Boom! He got up that morning, had no idea that door would open. But on that day, then the door opened, and the light flooded into the room. You don't know when that door will open and when the light will flood into the room. It will flood into the room, but believe. But you have to hold on to the belief because God demands faith. Wrestle with the discouragement, the frustration, but he still demands the faith. So it came to pass, we're even told, on the 20th year of King Artaxerxes when the wine was before him, and he goes before the king, and in verse 2, therefore the king said to me, why is your face sad? Since you were not sick, there is nothing but sorrow of heart. And he says, may the king live forever. And then in verse 4, then the king said to me, what do you request? Incredible, really. I mean, the king valued Nehemiah, but the king's a busy man. But to say to Nehemiah, and to have that softness of heart, see, even that was of God, I believe. Even that softness of heart on behalf of the king, to care about Nehemiah, was this care about my servant's day in the Persian Empire? They don't have care about your servant's day in the Persian Empire. You don't like your servant, you kill him immediately, okay? These are brutal people, but he's tender-hearted. Sometimes you need the tender-heartedness of a boss, of a friend, of a lawyer, of a judge if you're going through a court case, whatever it may be. I need that tender-heartedness, and I am totally convinced God gave that tender-heartedness to the king. The perception that even something was wrong with Hezekiah, all of a sudden it clicked in. A king didn't know the process, but God was working on his mind, because God can move the heart of the king like moving waters, we're told in Proverbs. And then he prays very quickly in verse 4, and I pray to the God of heaven. And we don't know exactly what that prayer was. It was very quick. And then he states his thoughts and his plan. And in verse 4, it said, so it pleased the king to send me, and I sent him a time. So he was well organized ahead of time. What a wonderful day that was. I'm sure he went to his deathbed remembering that particular day in the month of Nisan, when God answered that prayer. So stay with the desire and remember when God does answer it. Do remember God. And then there's the rest of the story. Now, the task of building the walls wasn't easy. It wasn't like everything worked out smoothly from there, but it did work out in a wonderful way, and God greatly blessed him. So just understand, as you're looking to God for a blessing, timing issues are involved. In open doors are what you're asking for, but it's a timing issue. You don't want to push things. There's a spiritual sensitivity You know, sometimes we need to show initiative. That is true. Initiative's good, but you got to sense as well, but has God opened a door here, or do I need to be knocking more on the door? And some of these things are just spiritually discerned as we draw closer to God, but God is the God that opens doors. Paul repeatedly, you see this in Corinthians and Colossians, open a door unto me. Somebody called Herbert Armstrong prayed and asked for open doors, and he and Loma then worked through the process of those doors. Open doors can be in all different areas of your life. What a wonderful blessing to have that door open. Seek God out to open that door. Explain to God why you want this to take place. Explain to him that you're not going to let go of it until it takes place. Work through the process. Fight through the process. Sometimes in order to receive a blessing, you must come to that singular confession. And this brings us to Genesis 32. We talk a lot in our church about Jacob wrestling for the blessing, which was true. And that was part of it, but that was only part of it. The wrestling was part of the reason he got the blessing. Fascinating God we have here, who literally comes down in the physical flesh and manhandles another man all through the night. Maybe men understand this a little bit more, because I think men like to wrestle more than girls. I don't see girls wrestle much. Do girls wrestle much? I don't usually see it. I think that's more of a man thing. Boys just love wrestling. It's just kind of in them. But they wrestle through the night, and God's not going to make it easy for him. He didn't do the magic wand to Jacob. You want the blessing? You want the blessing? Prove it. They wrestle all through the night, which wrestling can be exhausting. It's not an easy match. I don't think they took a lot of timeouts to have a glass of water, that type of thing. I don't think there was a lot of, boy, you're wrestling well tonight. Let's begin round two in two more minutes. Nothing like that. They were going at it. Very intense in the original land. These two were going at it. In the dark, Jacob knows something's different here. Won't let go until the blessing is granted, but the blessing is not granted until the confession is made. So in Genesis 32, you know, God's working with us. He's making us more Christ-like, and that means we're corrected. God is refining us, and he disciplines us, and it can be painful. It never needs to be overwhelmingly painful. It shouldn't. Little corrections here and there, guidance, maybe some sharp correction on occasion. The oil of corrections in the book of Psalms talks about this wonderful oil of correction. We need that. Sometimes those blessings are not given for certain reasons. So let's talk about the reasons why God delays blessings. Well, let's take a look at one of the most important reasons here in Genesis 32. Jacob has to confess what he is. There was this side to Jacob. He was a heel grabber, okay? James is the Greek equivalent of Jacob. Did you realize that? So it's not wrong to call your children Jacob or James. James is the equivalent of Jacob. You may not have known that. I don't know if your dad knew that when he named you, but Jacob had, there was like a lying ability there. He could craft a discussion in a way that was deceitful. Maybe he got it from his mom. Really interesting to see the family dynamics here. They wrestle, verse 24, chapter 32, and Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. And now when he had saw that he could not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip. That's very painful, apparently. He's out of joint. But Jacob still wrestles with Christ. In verse 26, and he said, let me go, for the day breaks. So Christ didn't want Jacob to see him fully. This is the dark of the night. Deep in the bowels of the sky, the dark of the night. And I don't know if the stars were out or it was an overcast sky. I'm not sure. So Christ says to him, a lot of meaning in this, what is your name? And he says, Jacob, meaning heel grabber, the one who trips up. I'm a tripper upper. This is a confession statement here before the blessing is given. It's very clear in the original language, and the Jews understand this as they translate the text. In order to receive the blessing, you have to confess the lousy person you are. And I do think that happens at times. I think it happens in my life, that blessings are withheld because I need to be working on this character weakness, this flaw, this personality defect or a sin. But it's not always a sin, okay? Don't make that mistake. It can be a personality defect that could lead to a sin. Maybe your priorities are not right. Though technically you haven't sinned yet, it can lead to sin. Maybe your temper hasn't totally gotten out of hand yet, but give it a little bit more time, it will, and you will sin. You see what I mean? It's like a ticking time bomb. Our defects are ticking time bombs. But God says, I'm tired of your conniving ways. You're going to deal with me. You got to deal with me face to face, okay? So he confesses, verse 28, and he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you've struggled with God and with men, and you have prevailed. And he's blessed there. It's a wonderful blessing. Now, verse 29, and he blessed him there after the confession. You shouldn't have to think long about the question I'm about to ask. You want to be blessed. What is the blessing? What is the character trait deficiency that's lacking in your life that you've been dragging your feet on that you haven't been working on? Is that getting in the way of God blessing you? That should take all of about 3.5 seconds to figure out. And I have to do the same, of course, a double measure of accountability on me because I'm talking about this subject today. God takes overcoming very, very, very seriously. At the time of the end, we see the Laodicean era of God's church. Most people are not overcoming. Overcome. God will bless you greatly. Find out what it is that front burner issue you need to overcome, and God will bless you. God is so pleased when you overcome. You're so pleased when your kids, maybe they're lazy, but that one day they do clean their room, or they're goofing around, they should be doing their homework, but that one day they do their homework. You're so pleased when you see children do what they should do. You're so quick to want to encourage them. And God loves it when we fight and wrestle with ourselves and we're in the process of overcoming. Maybe not overcoming our weakness in the totality in 24 hours. Come on, we're human. But he really sees we're putting up a fight. Be blessed by God, but remove the barrier to the blessing. Take overcoming more seriously. On a more regular basis. What a wonderful God who seeks to bless us. It's very important to understand that when we're blessed, we can misuse a blessing. This is very important. I think this can easily be missed. Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 12. David went through a lot. There are a lot of trials, a lot of difficulties in his life, but he was greatly blessed as well. With great honor, a wealth, abundantly wealthy man. God was not against him having material things. God's not against you having material things. However, be warned, you don't want to be constantly coming to God for physical blessings. I mean, if he sees that is so much always at the forefront of our minds, then he's going to ask the question, well, are material things always most important to you? Of course, when you're in a financial hole, we've all been there. You need help. It's not wrong to ask for help. And it's not wrong to have a new whatever that new item is. We live in America. We live in a green world. We need money. Whether we like it or not, you need money. You need to buy things, sell things. You need to sell homes, buy homes. So God is not against that. But we don't want to make that the number one priority every time we come to God with a prayer request. He'll get tired of that very quickly. See how angry God is with us when we mishandle a blessing. This is very important to understand. David is caught in the adultery. He confesses, which is good, and God will bless him for that in terms of forgiving him. And he's allowed to be king, and he is still blessed as king, but there's some suffering to come. In verse 7, 2 Samuel 12:7, and Nathan said to David, "You are the man, you're the one who committed the sin. And thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel. I blessed you, you are king of Israel. And I gave you victory over Goliath, and you were victorious in wars. You never lost a battle. And I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's house, authority over all of the property and the household of Saul. And had that been too little, I also would have given you much more." This may even be shocking to us because we grew up in this Protestant Walmart world, you know. Cheap as I can get, cheap, it's on sale, cheap. Okay, I go there most of the time too, but God is not against blessing people, even in material ways. He is not against blessing people. Herbert Armstrong would talk about that a lot. And with David, I would have even given you more, David. You could have asked, and I loved you so much, because David did love God with all of his heart, soul, mind, and mind. I would have given you more. But then you do this horrible deed. And in verse 9 he says, "Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You killed Uriah the Hittite," murder. "You took his wife to be your wife," the whole adultery stench. "And you had him killed with the sword of the people of Ammon. Now therefore, the sword shall never depart from your house." And it didn't. He had to suffer terribly. God still loved him and strengthened him even in the suffering. And he had to deal with all of this in his latter years. But God did put away his sin and did not remove him from being king. But what I want to point out here is when God blesses us, he expects us to handle those blessings unselfishly, with humility, with awareness of other people. Whatever the blessing is, you share it with other people. Something good happens to you, pick up the phone and phone somebody up and give them a word of encouragement. It doesn't always have to be a financial blessing. If you've been blessed financially, and I know you do this, it's wonderful if you can give a contribution to the Third Tithe Fund. Wonderful. We always have people who have third tithe needs. If you're blessed in your job, you know, be really good to your wife that month, a lot better than you have been. I'm serious about this. I think often we humans forget quickly. We get the blessing, we're thankful, and we kind of forget about it. Remember the blessings that God gives to you, because if we handle the blessings correctly, he will bless us even more. I'm going to conclude. I haven't finished all the points, but I don't want to go too much over time here, but let's go to this incredible statement. It's almost hard to wrap your mind around. It's found in Luke chapter 6. It applies in terms of human relationships. We can be blessed there. Your career, your job, finances. It has many reaches because God has created us thus, and you see in the Bible, God blesses people with health, deliverance from terrible situations. I mean, the blessings are truly great. Now, verse 38 of Luke 6, it says, "Give and it will be given to you." So be generous in all ways in your life. How you treat your spouse, be good. How you interface with your children, with friends. It's not always talking about financially, okay? We're Americans, so we always think about the green dollar. Could be that, but just be a giving person, because I will bless you in greater measure in all different ways when you're a giving person. In good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. So God blesses you in ways you may not even have fully appreciated, but he has used those blessings to bless other people in or out of the church, and God will increase the flow of those blessings to you. What a wonderful God. He's a God who blesses. Sometimes, even in trials, we end up going through a trial. That's a subject for another time. I don't have time today. It's too important to try to rush through that. Trials are wonderful blessings in disguise. They truly are. But we'll save that for another time. So enjoy the Sabbath. We have a wonderful God. And enjoy the fellowship wherever you are. Thank you for Zoom.